Welcome to The Big Interview. The Big Interview from the Customer Experience Foundation is our weekly podcast where we talk to the people at the sharp end of CX and contact centres, the movers and the shakers, the innovators, the disruptors, the people delivering in the real world who share their personal stories of their journey through our industry. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by Jerry Brown. Jerry, also known as the Customer Lifeguard, is on a mission to save the world from bad customer service. He helps businesses save customers at risk of expiring and breathes life into their customer service operations and customer experience strategy. Jerry has provided organizational leadership on people development, business transformation, customer engagement, and technology enablement for some of the largest companies in the UK, Canada, and EMEA. These include London International Patient Services, East Sussex County Council, National Express, Nutritia, the Royal Albert Hall, Ensley Insurance, O2, Screwfix, Sage, and Sky. He is a frequent speaker, chairperson, panelist, and facilitator, who I'm sure you all know from conferences, webinars, company events, and other business gatherings, where his many years of business and customer service experience provide stimulating, thought-provoking engagement and audience participation. He is also a published author, and his new book, When a Customer Wins, Nobody Loses, is available on Amazon right now to help business leaders to create winning and memorable customer experiences. Jerry is also a member of the Professional Speaking Association and the Global Speakers Federation, the Customer Experience Professionals Association, and is a certified customer experience professional. Jerry, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. That's quite a list of accolades.
Thank you, Keith. Yeah, I'd probably take up the whole interview just doing that. But I guess when you've been around as long as I have, and with podcasts now, which are also where we have video, I can't hide behind my voice being as old as it is. So, yes, I've had a chance to do lots of things.
Amazing. So, Jerry, talk us through your current role. What have you been working on over the last 12, 18 months? What are the sort of things you've been doing?
Yeah. Well, as we've found over the last time period with COVID, it's made a lot of changes in our life. But fortunately, I guess, because a lot of the things I was doing before that started, I was able to work from home. So that's been a fairly common trend for me for a long time. So it didn't have too much of an effect. And I found I was, as many of us have, I think, found that I was able to actually do quite a bit more. I was a bit more productive because I wasn't traveling, and so able to have a meeting and then perhaps go to another meeting virtually and so on. And I was working, one of the organizations I was working with the East Sussex County Council, which I live quite close to that anyway, and I was helping them do some work around developing a new property management system, but also how that fitted in with their customer experience strategy. So I was doing some work with them. I've been working with a housing association up in Hertfordshire, looking at their customer experience, helping them get a lot of their people ready for some of the changes that are taking place in that industry, because I think the housing association market is certainly a very interesting one for me, because I think people realize that a housing association customers are just as important. The fact that they may not, you know, some of them may, you know, facing challenging times, finding a home, whatever it happens to be. But these people deserve just as great customer service and customer experience as anyone else. So I think many housing associations have realized that. And so I've had an opportunity to work with a couple of those now to help them do that. So I was able to do that. And again, as you mentioned, I was doing a number of speaking things for some of the various organizations, chairing some virtual conferences. And so I've kept pretty busy, and it's been very enjoyable, all things considered.
And how have you found the virtual conferences as opposed to some of the face-to-face ones that we've been used to? How have you found that?
Well, again, I think they've been interesting in the sense that we've found the way that I've done a couple of them has been where I've actually gone to a TV studio where in a newsroom scenario. So it's sort of like BBC or one of the news broadcasters interviewing guests You have that they're in the studio and the guests are coming in via Zoom or Teams or whatever it happens to be. I think one of the things we found is that it's been much more structured. That may sound strange, but when I've been doing them live, quite often the speaker goes on a little longer than you want, and you end up trying to get the hook out to pull them off before they overrun on their time. Whereas with the virtual events, we found they were very well prepared, they were well structured, and because we had the opportunity, I guess, to have interaction with them. And as we went through it, the timing was good. I think the information was really good. And of course, the information was available for people to download and look at their leisure. So I think it has been good. Clearly, we all want to get back to seeing people in real time. We all want to get back to face-to-face. But I think all things considered, they've run really well. The platforms that they've run on have been quite good. So I think it's been a good experience for people that have gone through it, both from a presenter perspective and from an audience perspective.
Super. And talk a bit about some of the current challenges that your clients have been facing.
Well, again, being involved in those conferences, and also I've been fortunate to be asked to judge some of the award shows, and I know we've seen a lot of noise going on right now about CX awards, and are they worthwhile and all this kind of stuff. And I think awards of any kind are worthwhile because we want to recognize people that have really done a good job, and I mean really done a good job. So I've had a chance to see how many of these organizations have addressed many of these issues, which has been really good for me. Professionally, but also as a customer. I'm really frustrated right now, frankly, Keith, with the level of customer experience in the UK. It's quite appalling. It really is. So many organizations still continuing to play the COVID card and, unprecedented demand, more calls than ever, blah, blah, blah. No, sorry, 18 months on, we need to stop that. So I think for me, working with some of these organizations, how do we help them in addressing this? It's not easy. I'm not suggesting for a moment that it's easy to overcome the things that we're all facing with COVID. But there are companies, and again, I've been fortunate to have exposure to those organizations, hearing some of their people share their stories, how they've overcome that. And in hearing those and recognizing very large companies and really good organizations that have done some great work in making sure that customers got great service. And having experienced bad service as a customer, I know it doesn't have to be that way. So I think one of the biggest challenges is how we help these organizations, especially some of the ones that don't appear to be either not interested. I don't know what the issues are, but for me, it's getting through to them to say, look, we can help. There are ways, and it's not just technology, it's a number of things, but how can we help them? And I think getting through that maze of people that go, well, we're still working on a few things. We're not quite ready yet. Well, if you're not ready now, you're never going to be ready. So I think there's still challenges getting people to actually listen to the fact that they do need to make changes, and that can be done, that can be achieved.
Yeah, and throughout your career, and also most recently over the last 18 months, and I guess the two are quite similar, where does it go wrong? Now, what can we all learn? What are the common themes? Where do all organizations get this badly wrong?
Well, I can talk from some very recent experiences that I've had where we've seen every day where we're over whether through emails, whatever messages we're getting, telling us all about digital transformation, AI, how great it is, how wonderful it is. And I think organizations are failing to understand how important it is to maintain this human connection. And specifically, when they say, oh, you can go online and do this, or you can talk with one of our chatbots, or you can have a chat session. And many organizations seem to fail to realize that many of these things you can't do. I've had a very painful experience this past few days with my bank trying to get something done. I actually started off going to the branch, couldn't do it there. Then tried chat, couldn't do it there. Went online, couldn't do it there, and finally had to call, which of course is where many of us have been frustrated over the last 18 months, sitting in call queues. I had to call. I called four times. Each time I was in the queue for an hour. I was given one callback option at one point, So I think what it is not understanding the customer experience. That sounds strange. Why wouldn't it? It's the fact that they don't appear to recognize how truly bad they are and doing things to overcome that. And again, that's easier said than done. I get that. But this is what I'm seeing right now. I'm seeing these organizations that are hiding behind COVID. One company, and I'm not afraid to call out some of these companies. One company, Milk and More, which is a very large company delivering milk and another dairy product things.
I saw the story.
A year and a half ago, we thought, well, let's start using them primarily because of, we're not using as much plastic. So, glass bottles, just trying to do our bit. Well, they recently announced, and I checked this morning to see if it was still true. We've cut off. We're not using our phone lines anymore. We stopped using phone lines. Really? What are they thinking? So, you can call us, you can send us an email, you can do it by online and all that. Fine. And I realize milk probably isn't quite as important as getting something done with your bank. But these organizations just failing to recognize the damage that they are doing reputationally, the damage it's going to cost them at some point. I don't know when financially, I think it will. And so I think it's a failure to really understand the customer, really understand what their customers want. And again, I keep getting emails going, customer expectations are changing, they're evolving. No, they're not. What we want and what we wanted for a long time, we simply want to be able to contact an organization. We want them to understand what our issue is. We want them to be empathetic, and we want them to be able to solve it. That shouldn't be a problem, but for so many businesses, it truly is. So I think that it's this recognition or failure to recognize that customers are really suffering from bad service and not doing anything about it. And again, you think, well, isn't that obvious? Well, no, it's not, apparently, to a lot of companies. So the work that I do is to try and help them in all of the areas, the technology side of it, the people side of it, the procedural side of it, bringing all those things together, because I think it isn't necessarily, it never will be one thing. It will always be a combination of those things. And if I can help them through that, my background is in technology. I've done a lot of technology work. And if that's part of the answer, that's great. If we can find technology that works. So my experience is with my bank where no callback was available. And even after waiting on hold, I was expecting, well, maybe I'll get another callback opportunity. No, I wasn't given that. There was certainly no queue message. You start off with, it's probably going to be at least 20 minutes. Well, that message has been on that IVR for probably 2 years. And no update. No update saying, you're this in queue. At least so you can do something about it. And so when you don't inform people, when you don't keep them informed, then that's really where you fail people. So that's a long answer to your question, but these are some of the challenges I think businesses are facing.
So going back to the issue with organizations looking at AI and technology and failing to understand their customers, is that a failure of us as a CX industry? Are we losing the argument with technology, with marketing, with finance? Is that a failure of us as an industry that we just don't have enough traction? And if it is, what do we do about it?
Yeah, I certainly, I'm a very confident person. I've been doing, I've been working for many, many years. I don't have any lack of belief in my own capabilities. But yes, I feel like a failure right now. I feel almost like a fraud that I have failed to help organizations, or I've failed to get through to them. The number of conversations I have with organizations. So you think, well, maybe it must be you, Jerry. You can't be any good at this. Well, maybe I'm not. But, I guess I look at it from, as I said, all of these areas. I talk about reputational damage. I talk about what's happening and look at all of the things that's going on. And I think that I talk to many of my colleagues, many of the people that we both know. I think they're equally frustrated with organizations that are failing to take this on board. And, you think, well, what's the problem, Jerry? Are people not hiring you? Is it? Well, no, that's not it. I mean, I'm working with organizations, but I think there is so much more you can do. I find that with many businesses, I get to a certain point and they don't want to do any more. That's fine. Let's just keep it at that for now. So I think that, as an organization, we do need to do more. There's no shortage of information. Let's face it, the various organizations or customer experience organizations that are out there, continually firing out information on insight and analytics and how important it is and ROI and all of this kind of stuff. I guess one of the things I thought, you know, some time ago, if you have to do an ROI on customer experience, there's definitely something wrong. But at the same time, if an organization really doesn't get it, if they don't get the fact that if they continue to do this, they will either be out of business or they will suffer financial hardship, then perhaps we do need to do more of that. So perhaps that is part of it, being better at being able to show organizations the financial benefits and the financial disadvantages of not providing great customer service. So I wish I had an easy answer, because I'd probably be, you know, I'd be able to retire now if I was able to do that. But I think as a group, yes, we do have to do more. And I know there are people out there, and people that you and I both know, some of whom you've already interviewed, that are doing their best to try, and we're trying to come together as an organization to do more. And I know that the CXFO is front and center doing that. So I'm keen to help in that venture.
So talking about you a bit more personally now, how did you start in customer service? Talk us through about your journey through the industry. How have you got to where you are today?
Well, it started a long time ago. I worked for Bell Canada for many years. And I worked for Bell Canada at a time when there wasn't a lot of options in terms of what you could do with technology and what you could do with phone services. And in Canada, I'm talking now 80s, 90s. Canada being a very big country like the U.S., the ability for someone just to jump in a car and go, oh, I'll come up for a meeting this afternoon or tomorrow, that's where I live now in the U.K., I can jump on a train and I can be in London in 45 minutes. So if somebody says, yeah, we can meet tomorrow, Jerry, great, notwithstanding what we've been going through lately, but that's doable. In Canada, that's not as easy as a big country. So in the 80s, the phone companies in Canada got together and said, how do we make getting in touch with people, how do we make communication easier? So that's when they started creating 800 numbers and various services to help organizations get in contact with people. And so part of my role at that time in the phone company was to help organizations in being better at talking on the phone. And I don't know if you've ever seen any of the commercials or training things that John Cleese did many, many years ago. Really, really funny. And we used those. I mean, that was he sold those back in the 80s, and they were really funny, but they were very effective. So before telemarketing had the bad name it's got now, telemarketing in Canada was a very effective tool for following up on leads, for making appointments, for following up on collections, all of these various programs. So the idea, of course, for the phone companies were they were going to make more money, of course, with these services by getting people to use the phone more frequently and so on. So it was quite successful. So I got to learn a lot about, you know, working with people and enjoying working with people, helping them be more effective, making effective sales presentations, and also tracking that information. And that's where I sort of got into the technology stream. And again, in the late 80s, early 90s, when there weren't many computers around, people were, you know, there were mainframes, so people weren't using very many PCs. This is when the first contact management services came, or the software products came out. And I got quite interested in those. And I bought one and started using that, and then started, became a partner in that business, and started selling what became CRM, what was then called contact management. So I got very interested in CRM type products and how they could help. And then eventually moved on to a role with Genesys in Canada. So Genesys still being one of the leading, what was then just called contact management software or contact center software. Now, of course, they do the whole gamut of all those kind of products. So I worked with them, and then came over to the UK in 98 to run their channels organization, which I did for a number of years. And so got very involved. And when you mentioned, you know, working with some of the larger contact centers, that's where that was. So Genesys were very successful, still are very successful in deploying lots of large scale contact centers. And I got very involved in those. And then when I left Genesys, I sort of went on to continue to do some of the same things, but also got very interested in CRM. So I became a Salesforce partner. I've been using Salesforce for 20 years, an example. So got fairly good experience in these kinds of technologies and how they can all link in. But again, in the big picture, not just in technology for technology's sake, but how does that align with what you're trying to do from a people perspective, procedurally, and so on. So trying to bring it all together. So that's kind of been the journey, and that's, you know, that's what I do today. So I'm quite often get pulled into an organization to look at the strategy, but that sometimes extends into, well, you know, what does our technology look like? And I'm, you know, talking to a number, working with a number of organizations right now, looking at their, as an example, their contact center technology and also their CRM technology to see if it's fit for purpose and so on. So that's what I do. And it keeps me pretty busy because it's a fairly broad church when you look at all those things.
Okay, fabulous. So what would you say the biggest issue is you've ever had to overcome? What's the biggest challenge you've ever had to face?
I don't know. I guess, as I said, I'm a pretty confident person, and I have, I guess it's probably the fact that if people can't see, you know, where how to make improvements. You know, going back a few years, you know, I remember working with an organization in Canada, and I was, you know, convinced that, you know, the ideas that I had were very viable ones. And it was really frustrating. It was probably the first time this, somebody said no to me. And I was like, you can't do this. And I guess the challenge, it's still the same today. What I said to you earlier on about the fact that when you look at an organization and you can see what's happening, and you're hopeful that they will understand what you're trying to get through, and you can't get through, I think that still to me frustrates me. So that's still probably the biggest challenge I've ever had to overcome. Is I'm happy if somebody says, well, Jerry, you know, we looked at your proposal and you know we like it, but we don't think you're the right. That's fine. I'll accept that. More than, well, no, I don't think the time's right, or I don't think we need, you know, we don't need to do something. And I think that's still the biggest thing I have to overcome, the fact that people sometimes just stick their head in the sands. And it's not just me, because I know, I'm sure you face the same things at different times.
Yes, definitely. So what, or maybe who, would you say have been the biggest influences on your life and career?
I think people that, and I guess it's changed. It does change as you age. People that have stayed the course. I admire people that have been able to stick with something. And you know, when I read books, I read business books, but I also read other books. One of the guys that I really like is Michael Lewis, who wrote, among other things, The Big Short. he wrote the book about the Oakland A's and Billy Beane, which was all about, and I wrote quite a lot about this, which was all about using data and stuff like that. I've been a big fan of you know, lots of sporting people that, again, that have done well. I started, and partly because, you know, I decided when I was about in my late 20s that I was in poor physical condition, and that if I continued eating, drinking, smoking, and doing all the things that I was doing, I wouldn't last that much longer. And so I started to, at that time, it was the time of running boom, I just started to run a little bit more just to try and get a bit fitter. And that led me into, you know, running some 10K races and then some slightly longer races, and then marathons and triathlons and double marathons and so on.
Wow.
And I guess in doing that, and I'm still running today. I mean, I was out for a run just before I started this, and I still do park run every Saturday morning, which is the 5K run that people do in various places around the country. And I'm usually the oldest one there, if that tells you anything. And so people that I've seen, I guess people in the sporting business, you look at people like Roger Federer, who have stayed at the top of their game for so long. People like that, I'm very encouraged with that. You know, people in the you know, runners, again, people that have made, you know, managed to stay healthy and do all of these things. So because it's helped me tremendously. I couldn't do the things I do if I didn't have some decent level of physical fitness. So as a result, you know, I don't, you know, I think I'm reasonably fit for my age. I don't have any, you know, I don't take pills. I don't have any, I'm not walking around with sticks or like that. And I, you know, I accept the fact that some of that's luck, but some of that's, that works well. So I think I'm generally impressed with people that have lasted, if you like, lasted the course. So, you know, when you run marathons, when you do something like that, I've done the Ironman triathlon in Hawaii twice. You know, that's a 2.4 mile swim. It's a 112 mile bike ride and a marathon. Wow. And when you go through things like that, it really helps you understand the value of being able to stay. And I share that not to boast, but simply to say, these are the things that I think have made a big difference in my life, and still to this day make a big difference. So being able to go out and run, being able to swim, doing all of these things still, much slower and not as far as they used to. But so those things, and people that, again, I read lots of stories about people that do these things, you know, people that are that have been doing it for years. And so these are the people that inspire me. I guess that's the thing that I see. And I get to meet some of these people. And I've met quite a few people who have been involved in these kind of things. And as a result, you know, I just think they're very inspirational for me, and hopefully I can, you know, play that same role for other people.
Amazing. So tell us about your book.
Well, I wanted to write about customer experience some time ago. And when I first, I started from scratch, I thought, well, I'll just start writing. And then I realized that I'd written quite a bit about it in the past, posts on my website and articles that I've written for various people. So what I did was I just decided I was going to look at all of those things and see if I could put it into some kind of decent shape that made some kind of sense.
Yes.
And the title, you know, when I came up with the title, When a Customer Wins, Nobody Loses, was really, again, from my own experience as a customer. And I thought of that. Obviously, you're looking to have something catchy, if you can, memorable. And I thought, well, if that's true, you know, if a customer wins, isn't that what you want? Isn't that what we all want? And of course, I still believe that to this day, a customer winning. Now, that's different things to different people. Customer winning doesn't necessarily mean that the customer gets one over on you or fools you in some way. It means that what I said earlier, when I call an organization, when I contact an organization, I want them to understand my issue. I want them to listen to me. I want them to be empathetic. And I want them to resolve my problem. And if they do that, I win, even if it's just getting something simple done. So I looked at all of the things that that I'd experienced as a customer, and then all the things that I felt that I've been able to bring to the table from a business perspective, and just started to put that in some kind of order. And I had written about the four principles of customer experience, which, you know, as you know, I've shared with you in the past, which are culture, communication, commitment, and community. And I use those as the foundation. So I use those as the foundation of what I do. I also put those in the book and use those throughout the book to show examples of, you know, organizations that did this well. And so, you know, I put some stories in the book about some of the people. And what I tried to do was to make it a more of a human story than you know, lots of graphs and charts and things like that. It was really just, if you like, it was almost a little bit autobiographical. And I started it off by telling the story of Dave Carroll. And if you know Dave Carroll, who is the United Breaks guitarist guy, Canadian guy that I met several years ago. And when I heard of, you know, his story is, of course, he traveled from Canada to the U.S., the American or United Airlines broke his guitar, and then he tried to get refund, blah, 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 long story. And of course, he's made a career out. And so I used his example as the sort of, this was 2009 when this happened. So I sort of started the book as that was the starting point. Here's a great example of someone that was treated badly and finally found a way to respond in a very professional, if you like, but a very, very strong way. And of course, the United Blaze Guitars, which has probably had, I don't know, 20, 25 million views now on YouTube. And it's a tremendous story, and it's still a tremendous story about how organizations fail to understand what I said earlier, fail to understand what they've done to a customer and how that played back. So the book really is those kinds of stories. I use examples. I used a baseball analogy that I used from Michael Lewis's book, Moneyball, and just really try to give this is sort of, and I what I liked about the book, and I say this in all due modesty, I reread it every now and then, and it's still valid, which is great. I have updated it a little bit. But, you know, I guess the thing I liked about it is I look at it, it still makes sense, which is kind of good. Now, obviously, anyone that writes a lot, and I'm not that prolific, you know, you want to keep it as current as you can. So I do go back, and I will be revisiting it soon to do an updated version. But frankly, you know, if you bought it today, it will be just as valuable as if you bought it 3 years ago. So I think it was an enjoyable experience. It's one of those things they can't take away from you. Once you've got it, it's there. And I'm delighted that people buy it. It's not going to make me a millionaire, but nonetheless, it's nice to have that.
Great. So as you know, we always like to ask our guests to reflect and help those coming up through the industry today. So you can go back to being 25 or 30 again. What advice would you give to your younger self?
I think when I think specifically of that age, I would probably think about looking at career choices at that time. I think that I was fortunate. I read the Times Saturday and Sunday Times. They do interviews with people, and they ask people who their mentor was or if they had a mentor. And I didn't have one. And I don't say that, but it's not good or bad. But I guess I would say to myself, follow your heart. I probably did, but not as often and with as much conviction as possible. So I ended up saying, oh, I'll go over here and do this. Oh, I'll try and do this and do this. And I think that, again, you know, what I've learned from spending lots of time pounding the pavements and doing all those things athletically is that, you know, once you get on the right path, stick with it. And I guess that's what I'm trying to do now. You know, when I talk about customer experience and customer service, whatever we want to call it, customer engagement, it feels to me like I'm doing the right thing. So what I said earlier about feeling like a failure and a fraud, I don't really feel that way. But I think the thing is that, you know, I feel that the things that I do, and I'm sort of trying to put this in, again, into some context to write about it. I think the things that I do feel right at this point. And I think that if nothing, that's what age has taught me, being around for a while, is that once you get to a certain point, you go, you know what, this feels like it's the right thing to do, and it will help people. And, yes, you know, is it as important as curing world hunger or, you know, all of these things? And I don't mean to be flippant about that. I'm simply saying, you know, there are things in life that are really important. I get that. But I think, and the way I looked at this was that when you think about all of us every day, we all have 10, 15, maybe more interactions with businesses. Why shouldn't it be good? Why can't they all be good? Now, we know they all won't. So if I can help an organization, if I can help people make those better, then I think I am contributing to the world. I feel like I am doing the right thing. So I think, you know, going back, I would simply say to myself, and maybe I did. Maybe I did stay the path because I'm, you know, doing what I'm doing now and I enjoy doing it. And so I think I would simply just be more, perhaps a little bit more stringent in terms of saying, you know, stick with it. Don't be going everywhere else. I mean, I've traveled a lot. I've lived a lot of my life in Canada. I've lived a lot of my life here. You know, I've done lots of different things. I would say I'm impulsive. There's no question about that. But at the same time, I think I've reached a stage in my life where I think, you know what? I feel good. I'm on a good path. I'm doing the right things. I'm hopeful that people appreciate it. And therefore, you know, what more can you want, frankly, in life?
Fantastic, Jerry. Okay, so leave us with your final thoughts. You can wave a magic wand and fix everything about customer service, the world of CX, the industry. What are you going to do?
Well, I guess, it, you know, as I said earlier, my recent experiences with trying to get through to people is that whether or not I know that we can certainly make sure that technology can solve some of the issues that we're having now. And these things have been floating around for a lot longer than the pandemic, but they've got even worse. So I think I would have a magic wand that said every phone call was answered within a reasonable time frame. I don't think anyone has an issue, especially those of us that are in the business. Nobody has an issue with if somebody says, hey, you know, you're going to have to wait 5 minutes. Fine, that's all. I get it. There's lots of people, many of these advisors that I talk to, they're working from home. I know that. I get that. It's not as easy. So I would simply say, let's find a way to deal with these issues far more quickly than we are, because we're frustrating everyone. We're frustrating a customer, whether they're a passenger, whether they're a VA passenger trying to get a refund, whether they're an insurance customer trying to get coverage for something that happened. You know, we need to deal with these issues, because it is really unhealthy for these things to fester for everyone, for the individual that is frustrated and upset when things can't get resolved. And I don't mean resolving it in a I want to get my money back. You know, yeah, you want to get your money back, but, you know, resolving it in the right way. So we need to be faster. We need to be better. How do we speed things up? So if I could wave a magic wand and say, right, let's make sure that people get through to the right people as quickly as possible, that the people on the other end of those phone lines or other side of that chat have the ability to help them. Many people don't. This is why chat's frustrating. And that we can make sure that by doing that, you know, we get everyone's level of anxiety down. And in doing that, I think we do create a better place. It may sound a bit idealistic, but I mean, I think that to me is just fundamental. And we failed miserably over the last 18 months and maybe longer to do that.
Jerry, it's been fascinating having you with us today. I hope our listeners have found this as insightful as I have. You can find out lots more about the Customer Experience Foundation at cxfo.org. We thank you for joining us at the Customer Experience Foundation today, and we hope you can join us next time on The Big Interview.